She started as a teacher here in Duval County more than 30 years ago. Now she's back to lead the same district, but as superintendent. Dr. Diana Green comes full circle, and just ahead, she takes your calls as well. Good morning. Happy August. Thanks for joining us here live from Studio 5 for First Coast Connect on 89.9. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. We are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, Duval County's new school superintendent, Dr. Diana Green, steps into Studio 5 to take your calls and talk about her priorities for our public schools. You can get on the line right now and connect with the new superintendent, 549-2937. Then later, author Taysa Lord about her latest book on working your way through hurricane season and the hurricanes of life, too. Plus, Phase 8 Theater Company will join us to talk about their new production of the Pulitzer Prize-winning play Ruined here at WJCT Studios. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, she is the brand new superintendent for Duval County Public Schools. Dr. Diana Green has been on the job for a month now, coming to Jacksonville after a successful stint leading the school system over in Manatee County, Florida. There, she improved academic performance from a C to a B grade from the state, and she raised the district's reserve fund and credit rating. Ms. Green also convinced the voters in Manatee to approve a millage increase for their schools. How about that? Now, Diana Green actually got her start in education back in the 1980s as a teacher in the Duval County Public Schools. As she comes full circle, now leading the district, she joins us now here in studio with a look at her goals for students and teachers in Jacksonville, everything from academic performance to funding to public safety. Dr. Diana Green, a pleasure. Welcome to town. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
It's good to have you here on the show. What are your questions for the new Duval superintendent, Dr. Diana Green? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, or let us know your thoughts on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. We're already getting lots of comments there for the new superintendent. Lots of excitement, lots of curiosity about you. It's such an important position for the city. And as I mentioned, you were chosen from a very competitive field of applicants with an amazing track record that you can bring to the table from Manatee County. So first, let me just say welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much. I've been very impressed with the citizens of Jacksonville. I've received such warm welcomes from individuals, whether they are from nonprofit organizations, other government agencies, and just people, everyday people on the street.
Good. It's good to know you're getting a warm welcome. And so you come, of course, to a job with an enormous workload, many challenges, but you bring a toolkit from your experience, 30 years in education, most recently in Manatee County, where you improved academic performance. You even got the voters there to agree to a millage rate to better fund their school system. I think that's something a lot of people who value education in this city would like to see happen as well. I guess let's begin by asking you, well, what do you see as the biggest challenges for Duval County Public Schools as you assume this position?
I think the biggest challenge is overcoming the perception that Duval County Public Schools is not a great school district. In my 30 days here, I've seen some fabulous programs, I've met some fabulous people who are working with our students, and we just need to get the word out. We need to share what's happening in our school district. One, so that we can attract students that actually live in Duval County, yet they're attending another county school district, mm-hmm. to attract them to come back to Duval County Public Schools. We want to continue to increase on the progress that we have made, especially at our high schools. We have an all-time record high graduation rate of 81%. If you look at our traditional high schools, you'll see that many of them are well into the 90% students graduating. We are doing a fabulous job with acceleration programs. Mm-hmm. whatever a student desires to do for a career or their interests or their talent, we have a program available for them in our school district.
So you see it first and foremost as a matter of telling that story to parents who are choosing other options. They're choosing to send their kids to school in St. John's County, or they're choosing a charter school or a religious school.
Absolutely. We want to tell our story. But in the end, I truly believe the parent is the best person to make that decision mm-hmm. about what academic or what type of schooling they feel is best for their child. But as the superintendent, I am going to start sharing that story and touting how great Duval County Public Schools. And we do have 33 charters, 167 traditional schools, and a host of private schools. So parents in Jacksonville have a host of options, and it can be overwhelming. But through our school choice office, many of them can find out information. They can go online to our website and find out information about what's available and what could be a possibility for their child.
We'll go to your calls in a moment for new Duval Superintendent, Dr. Diana Green, 549-2937. Okay. I know the school board here was very impressed with your ability to convince the voters over in Manatee County to approve a millage increase for new mm-hmm. schools. Is that something in your toolkit that you want to bring to Duval eventually? Do you see that as something you'd like to achieve here?
Well, I need to first hear from our constituents. I need to hear from my bosses, the board, if that's their desire. In moving that forward in Manatee County, there were a number of steps we needed to take. First, we had to show our community our financial house was in order. When I arrived to Manatee County, they were in the hole.
Mm-hmm. Things were not in good shape.
They were not in good shape. The district was $8 million in the hole, and we needed to not only solve that problem, but show them that we had flourished. We had put in systems that held the district accountable to ensure that that situation did not happen again. And as a result of a lot of hard work and from mm-hmm. a lot of people, Manatee now has a credit rating of, I think it reached A-, when it was it was basically junk bonds. We wouldn't even qualify for junk bonds over 5 years ago.
How'd you do it?
Well,
how'd you turn it around?
It was developing a laser-like focus, changing some practices, changing the philosophy on how we budget, and putting those philosophies into action, into practice. We hired a new CFO. That CFO worked very closely with me in crafting the budget, in ensuring that every 6 weeks we would have a checkup on our budget. It was stressful,
and
it was a lot of monitoring of where our dollars were going and making sure that we were good stewards of the funding and that we were transparent. People could see what we were doing.
You improved the funding. And by the way, Manatee County is Bradenton, Sarasota area, just south of Tampa, St. Pete, for those who aren't familiar of the location. You turned the money around. You improved academic performance. So as you pointed out, your predecessor, Nicolai Vitti, had some success as well, improving graduation rates in Jacksonville, improving test scores. There's still a long way to go. How do you plan to approach academic excellence for Duval?
Well, yes, it is a long ways to go. We are restructuring our turnaround office, and that particular office works with our struggling schools that have a school grade of D or F. And we're restructuring that process so that we are putting more resources and more access to those schools to provide as much support for those, not only children, but for mm-hmm. the teachers and administrators of those schools.
The state is now allowing less time for districts to turn around struggling schools. In fact, I believe when the school year starts here in a week or two, a couple of schools will be run by an outside company, and there are more schools on the bubble. So there's not much time to waste, is there?
No, there's no time to waste. And that's why within my first 30 days, we attack this as probably priority number one. How do we change our practices to ensure success for those schools? Yes, two of our schools, Lake Forest and Northwestern, are under an external operator. However, we will partner with that external operator to continue to provide support for those two schools. Mm-hmm. And our new turnaround plan is being led by Mr. Wayne Green. He is coming
no
from
relation
the,
to you?
No relation. He has no E on the end of his name, and I have an E on the end of my name. He is coming from the Department of Education and has a vast amount of experience in working with schools that are in turnaround, and also partnering with Carolyn Davis, who is going to be a super principal of three schools, who she has shown expertise in turning schools around and just creating that atmosphere that we are going to support these schools. We're going to ensure that the resources are available to them and that we are going to have these benchmark points that we will continue to, like I did in Manatee, laser-like focus, but in a way that we're supporting, but we're also stretching them to continue to do what is needed to help these students who are struggling, especially in the area of literacy.
That is a big one. And let me ask you one more question before we go to the callers. The state, of course, has passed a new law around school security in the wake of the mass shooting in Parkland. The district's now going to hire armed school safety officers for each campus. And that has been controversial all over the state. Mm-hmm. How do you plan to implement that new mandate from the state in terms of making sure students are safe, or at least safer than they might have been in the past? This is a concern I know you're probably hearing a lot about from parents.
Well, this is a concern for our entire community. This challenge that has been posed to every school district is one that we will have to be diligent. We will have to be patient. Duval County is fortunate in that we have our own police force that has school resource officers in all of our secondary schools. For our elementary, we are hiring school safety assistants. It has been a challenge. The challenge has not been finding people to apply for the job. The challenge has been people applying and making it through the entire process and the training that is required for them to be eligible to actually be a school safety assistant. Our first graduating class finished a week ago, and we hired 14 people. However, that out of that process, that started with hundreds of applicants. So mm-hmm. it will be a challenge for the school district, as well as other school districts around the state, to continue to look for individuals that have the same criteria and characteristics that law enforcement is also looking for, for just the community at large. And for Duval, for us, we need 105 school safety assistants for our elementary schools. And we are meeting with the sheriff to work through a plan that we are going to support our elementary schools, as well as ensuring that our secondary schools have SROs starting on the first day of school in our secondary schools, and having a plan that we will have all elementary fully serviced by the end of the first 9 weeks.
And school starts in Duval,
August 13th.
August 13th, a week and a half.
Yes.
I'm going to have to hit that tax-free weekend on, on Friday and Saturday for my own household. Let's go to some calls now for Dr. Diana Green, the new superintendent for Duval County Public Schools. By the way, correct me if I'm wrong, the first female and first African-American superintendent for this district, right?
As a permanent superintendent.
As a permanent superintendent.
Yes.
So it's breaking barriers in Jacksonville. And let's go to your calls, 549-2937. Doran on the west side. Doran, hello.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Dr. Green.
Good morning.
I'm calling to really hear your perspective on school choice. I was going to ask if you supported it, but based on the conversation I've heard so far, it sounds like you do. My concern is that this whole school choice movement has really undermined the success and viability of neighborhood schools, traditional neighborhood schools. And I believe that problem is connected to the perception that Duval County does not have good schools because it is not uniformly successful. There, we definitely have some great schools in Duval County, and we have some really underperforming, poorly resourced and poor performing schools. And I really think school choice and the magnet programs have undermined commitment to neighborhood, high quality neighborhood schools. I'd like to hear your defense of this whole school choice movement. Thank you.
And by the way, we're getting emails, Facebook comments, basically asking you the same question. Here's one from an email from Joshua. What do you plan on doing in competing with charter schools under Betsy DeVos's assault on our public schools? That's the Secretary of Education, of course. Comment on Facebook from Susan. If we don't speak up loudly, privatization is where we are headed. So this fear among some of your constituents that public schools are being subjected to, I guess, death by a thousand cuts over time. What about that perception, and how do you address those concerns?
Those concerns are very real. Though I support school choice, I am more supportive of our traditional public schools. The way that we combat this is ensure that every public school, no matter what zip code it is in, is a great public school for any student to attend. This change in perception can't just be the superintendent. It requires everyone getting on board to decide that this is a priority. Public education is a priority, and that we're all going to stand up and speak out against anything that would become a roadblock, that would become an opportunity to dismantle public education. So that's why I've focused on our struggling schools and putting in an infrastructure that is going to provide them the maximum support in resources to ensure that they have an opportunity to be successful. When I talk to the principals, I talk about equity. Equity does not mean everybody's getting the same. Equity means everybody is getting what they need to meet that high standard or that standard of excellence for students. So my goal is to ensure that that neighborhood elementary school or that neighborhood middle or high school is an excellent school, and the parents will want to choose their neighborhood school. I also know that the district was in a court-ordered desegregation lawsuit and had a requirement to put in magnet schools. And as a parent, my child attended a magnet school. But
by the way, are you a Florida native? Let me just jump in. I'm not sure.
Well, I'm a military brat, but my mother is a Florida native, and she is from Ocala, Florida.
Okay.
And my son attended a magnet school, but my other son attended a traditional school. Yeah. And as a senior leadership in education, I made sure that both schools need what resources they needed, they had it. And as superintendent for Duval County Public Schools, my goal is that we're going to ensure that the resources are where they need to be. And if a student is struggling, the resources that that student needs may be different than the resources in a school where a student is not struggling.
Speaking of that, what are your thoughts about counties around Florida, including this one, had played for a bit in suing the state legislature over these types of issues, going right at the legislature and saying that they don't agree with the way the legislature views funding and resources and just the ground rules, I guess, around public education?
You know, every district has to have that conversation with their board. In Manatee, we had that conversation and chose not to join the lawsuit. If having that conversation with the board here in Duval County, if they are supportive of moving forward to sue the legislation, then we're going to do it. It's all about, again, everything that we want for our children requires that we're all in this together. It isn't just the superintendent does need to be standing up and holding the mantra about traditional or charter. Both of them are considered public education, and that we need to support it and ensure that we're not dismantling it. And I have no problem standing up for our children, but we are stronger when we are working together. And that's why we've come to this place of Team Duval, that we need players that are willing to get off the bench and join in and engage with our schools, with our students, and with the process that that will ensure that every student has an opportunity to be successful.
So you've come up with that slogan, I guess, for the whole district, team, and the whole city, Team Duval?
Team Duval.
Let's go to some more calls now for Diana Green, the new superintendent for Duval County, 549-2937. Sam at the beaches has been holding a bit. Hey, Sam. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. First, let me welcome Dr. Green to the district, to Duval County, to Jacksonville. And I live at the Beaches area. I'm in District 2, and I'm a candidate for the school board. And my primary concern is the budget. How do you feel about having an internal or an external audit to get the financial house in order?
An audit. Does the district need an audit?
Well, the board is in the process of reviewing their job description for our internal auditor, and they will move forward through with that process. And hopefully by November, we will have a new internal auditor who will answer directly to the board. And I have no problem with our books being audited. Right now, we have a balanced budget. We just had a special board meeting moving that budget forward. We believe that the accountability that we've put in place by reviewing our budget every 6 weeks, that we are going to be in much better standing this time next year.
549-2937, Eric at the beaches. Hello, Eric. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Melissa?
Doing great, thanks.
Question is I've substituted in 43 schools from Mandarin to a lot in the Northwest Quadrant, and also did a lot of work with Head Start. And my question is this, is that you can have kids in the classroom, great teachers, but if there are problems at home, particularly for babies making babies or one-parent homes, and I've taught a lot of kids who just are being run by the grandparents, the economic issues come into play for the family. I know LeBron James can do a special kind of school, but I've also seen these around the country. And that is taking into consideration, what is the health of the family economically? How do you make it bigger than just a kid in the classroom? And also wanted to toss at you, a lot of kids who have IEPs aren't getting them. And I've watched teachers say, well, you know, the parents aren't coming, so we can't do anything on the IEP. Well, reality is the poorest kids drop even further to the back of the classroom. So one, is there anything that you can do to help parents, you know, as far as the economics in the sense is that maybe work with other agencies to improve the livelihood of the parents, especially in the poorest neighborhoods? Two is get in the backs of teachers that these IEPs are really important, especially to those kids that are challenged and from homes that are already tough to start off with. That's it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for those points, Eric. And certainly he's right about the environmental social determinants that are outside the classroom that have always been challenging for educators in Jacksonville. Your predecessor, Nicolai Vitti, started a parent academy to try to start to deal with that. What are your thoughts about that piece of your job? And it's a heavy lift.
Absolutely. The Parent Academy will continue. And that question also comes back to Team Duval. Team Duval can't just be the Duval County Public Schools. It requires us to collaborate with other agencies. In Manatee, we created an organization, and I can't say we created, it's a national organization called Grade Level Reading. And we partnered with United Way, our community foundation, to provide that whole level of support for those families. As a school district, our number one mission is to educate our students. United Way is an organization that can support those families with economic development or economic enhancement for families that struggle. Mm-hmm. Many of our families are of the working poor. They have two, three jobs. Children are coming home. They're latchkey. They're being taken care of by an older sibling. And it is a challenge. However, the school district and our schools have to be focused on the amount of time that we have them in the classroom. And when we provide high-quality instruction, we provide, through our social workers, those social supports, through the Parent Academy, through our Community Engagement Department, we connect them with other agencies to support them when they are outside of school.
Yeah.
We can't use that as a reason that these schools aren't successful. We have to overcome those barriers. We have to move through those roadblocks and ensure that they have, when they're with us, they have all the resources that they need. As far as the IEP, there was a question about the IEP.
Individual education plan.
Yes, yeah. I'm sorry. Individual education plan. We are reviewing our process and our guidelines on implementing a student's IEP to see where there are gaps, where there are weak links in the process. We're working with the FADS organization. And once we get that report back, we're going to build a plan to ensure that our students, whether they are receiving ESE services or whether they are looking to qualify for ESE services, that we strengthen that whole process and provide more support, especially to those teachers who are teaching students who are in what we call self-contained classrooms, mm-hmm. that they need either more training or more resources to ensure that those students can be successful and that those teachers are supported in those classrooms that can be quite challenging.
Here's an email from you. It's Bill in Springfield. He says, Dr. Vitti met a lot of resistance upsetting the status quo and introducing new ideas, both from parents and teachers. How do you plan to change the status quo while also getting everyone on board?
Well, that means closely to walking on water.
That's right. Which may explain why he's now in Detroit, not Jacksonville. Yeah. That's not a unique situation. You know, someone's brought in and given a really high bar to meet, mm-hmm. whether it's the schools, whatever, the tourism agency. I've seen this a million times in this city, and I guess most cities. You're given this incredibly high bar to meet. You come in, you assess the situation, you realize you're going to have to break some eggs to make the omelet, but there are going to be powerful vested interests that don't want you to break any eggs.
Absolutely. And it starts with communication. This isn't uncommon. As you stated, I've been a superintendent in another school district, and they had some very set norms that I needed to come in and make some adjustments, make some wholesale sweeping changes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't always easy. But when I communicated with the board, I indicated these are the issues that we're facing. These are my recommendations on fixing those issues. These are the priorities as the superintendent that if we want our school district to be an A school district, these things have to happen. If we want our school district to be financially solvent, these are the things that have to happen. And I have to move forward with my convictions. And it isn't about worrying about, am I going to have my job? It's about, I took this job on because of my passion and my belief in public education. And if we want a great public school district, we have to make bold decisions and we have to make bold moves. And so that's why I'm touting Team Duval. decide that you're going to be drafted on the team. And as I've told people, every team can only have one head coach. The head coach has to answer to owners. The board, they are my owners. And as the head coach, I'm going to put out a game plan. We're going to go with that game plan. And the desire is that we're going to win the championship. And winning the championship is ensuring that every student has an opportunity to be successful. Every student has the opportunity to meet their goals and graduate from high school. Every student has an opportunity to be in a great school. And sometimes you have to, as the head coach, you have to make tough decisions. Sometimes you have to bench players that were starters last year. Other times you have to take people who are on the bench who have great potential and put them in the game and get them started. So I am not afraid to move forward, make bold decisions, but you have to do your best to bring everyone along. The Jacksonville Jaguars, they've got Jacksonville invested in them. Mm-hmm. They've got us all cheering them on. Team Duval, I need everyone cheering us on. Everyone cheering on the public school district that we can be successful. Not only can be, we are successful.
Well, I wish you the best of luck. And I thank you so much for spending some of your time here with us. I hope you'll come back and visit us again soon.
Absolutely.
And good luck. She's Dr. Diana Green, the new superintendent for Duval County Public Schools. Much more still ahead later. Phase 8's new production right here at WJCT Studios this weekend. We'll tell you about that. But up next, author Taysa Lord on surviving hurricane season with your mental health intact. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Well, it's the first day of August. Can you believe it? It's what many call the real start of hurricane season, even though, of course, it officially started a couple of months ago. August, September, you know, that's the time of year when Floridians actually start to contemplate the nightmare of another named storm barreling down on this state. Of course, many of us around this region are still cleaning up from the devastation of Hurricane Irma last year. If you're nervous about storm season or any of life's storms, local author Taysa Lord has some ideas for dealing with it. She's here now with more about that. It's all in her new book called In the Eye. Taysa Lord, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I'm so happy to be here.
Good to have you. And yeah, hurricane season is a nightmare. You know, even when we don't get a bad storm, you're always kind of a little worried about it. So in your book, you use that as a metaphor for a lot of things, but let's start with hurricane season. The anxiety that it can produce among people, particularly after, I think, last year. Are you seeing a lot of that?
Oh, absolutely. And I just came back from New Orleans, where everybody is still reminiscing about the horror of Katrina. It's a life-altering event. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we had Irma and Matthew and Maria devastated the Caribbean. It just makes us very anxious.
Yes. And so calm serenity. Those are all things we want. They're easier said than done. You have some ideas in your book, In the Eye, on how to prepare mentally, spiritually for these types of upheavals.
Yes.
Can you share that a little
yes.
bit?
Yes. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that the best way to get instructions about hard things is through narrative, through a story, rather than being told, okay, step one, step two, do this. So I use the metaphor of incarcerated teenage girls or juvie delinquents who are hyper anyway, very filled with angst. And when a hurricane is told to them that it's coming directly for their facility, they just freak out. So as we are preparing, because I'm their empowerment teacher, which is a euphemism for yoga and meditation. Those are the things that I'm teaching them because I really wanted to share with them how I dealt with my own anxieties. And it works. So I volunteered through the school system and when had the Girl Scouts of America present me to the prison system, not the school system. I was listening to the superintendent just now. But these techniques work with any part of our lives. So a storm comes, okay, it could be a political storm. It could be a family storm. But in this case, it was nature. And of course, we can't control nature. So how do we deal with something that we can't control? We control our own selves.
Which is easier said than done.
Absolutely.
For so many of us.
Yes.
These are ancient techniques that really do work, as you say, but a lot of people resist them.
They do.
How do you ease someone into, and this is a growing field, mindfulness? Because mm-hmm. that's what you're really talking about, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, mindfulness. Presence.
First of all, let's define what that is.
Mindfulness and presence. I prefer the term presence because mindful sounds like, okay, are we emptying it? No, we're just focusing. So that just means to accept life. There is no such thing as really this life is terrible or my family's terrible or I'm terrible. So accepting what is the joy of serenity. And of course, in today's society, we're having a lot of trouble with that because people are afraid. There's a lot of angst, especially after 9/11. The world has changed. And people are more and more going toward anesthetizing themselves. The Xanax, Zoloft, and oxycodone situation is out of hand. Mm-hmm. Teenage suicide is skyrocketing. It's really a time where people like myself, who I call myself a spiritual activist, we're putting out the message of how to deal with fear and anxiety. So how do we deal with it? We accept the fact that it's happening, and it's not labeled bad. It just is. So it's taking us to a place of change.
Okay. So what are some easy ways you can advise listeners out there to ease their way into this type of practice? Because I've tried meditation and I have to confess, I'm not very good at it. I have such a type A personality that it's a challenge to be still like that, even though I know it's really good for you. And I'm working on that, but it's a challenge to slow down and be still and be present that way. How can people ease into this?
More than a challenge, it's a conscious choice because I believe people make such a big deal about meditation. So if we take that word away and just use the word presence, that's why I like presence. What does that mean? It means being conscious of your breath. It all starts with breath. That's what the ancients use. That's what the most modern teacher will use. Okay, there's all sorts of things you can do, all sorts of fancy mantras and all sorts of rituals. But it comes down to just tuning into your own breath. And even if it takes just one cycle of breathing, breathing in and breathing out, it's enough to absolutely change our brain.
And that has actually been clinically proven. There's so much data to show how this practice literally rewires the brain. It lowers blood pressure. It improves heart health. There are so many benefits.
Michael Pollan has just written an amazing book called How to Change Your Mind. And he says throughout the whole book, I wish he said it more, if you're a meditator, stick with the meditation because that's really the best way. But these days, people are using micro doses of mind-altering chemicals to help.
What, antidepressants?
Well, no. They're actually psychedelics. They're microdoses.
What, Timothy Leary, Tune In, Leary Drop Out? What,
people
are going back to that?
But tiny doses. Surely
of what?
LSD.
Get
psilocybin.
Out of here.
I know, it's radical. I would not recommend it for anyone, but psychiatrists, this book really explores it. Michael Pollan himself experimented with it, and his wife. And what he's telling people is, if you are filled with fear, if you have diabetes, if you have cancer, if you just can't operate, change your mind. So he says, okay, meditation is the best way, but like you said, Melissa, it's hard. Sometimes people make a big deal out of it, and really it's not. It's just following your breath. So what's happening in psychotherapy these days is documented with Michael Pollan's new book, which I found fascinating, mm-hmm. and I highly recommend it for anybody. But before you experiment with microdoses, try just following your breath.
Yeah, I think that's wise. Something else you write about is how these really ancient techniques, breathing, yoga, presence, they have not only helped regular people, increasingly they're being used to help people who are elderly, to help people who are incarcerated. The nonprofit Yoga for Change has done really good work in this area with that. This is an idea that is reaching whole new populations of people beyond what you might expect.
In school systems, that's why I quickly gave my book to the superintendent before she left, because they are introducing little kids, teenagers, not just incarcerated people, not just sick people, not just people who are on their way to another realm, to this technique. Because why should we have a society of anxiety-ridden people when we could have more production of better, more positive things, solutions to the environment, solutions to things that really matter, like new fuel and all those things? Why do we have to spend so much attention to our messed up emotions?
Yeah. And at this time of year, as you say, even with the title of your book, it's the time when anxiety rises, the hot time of year. We can all benefit from slowing down a little and being more present in our day-to-day lives.
Right. And being prepared. So that's the number one thing about the hurricane season. We Floridians know that. And even if a person comes from the Arctic, they know that if they have enough warm clothes, they're not going to be affected by the trials and tribulations of nature when the big blizzard comes along. So everybody has challenges. The people who have fires, they know that they have to have an exit plan really quickly.
Being prepared is good. Pick up Tessa Lord's book, too, and take a dip into these ideas. It's called In the Eye. Tessa Lord, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
A quick break, and in a moment, Phase 8 Theater Company takes the stage once again here at our own WJCT Studios with the Pulitzer Prize-winning production, Ruined, a tale of survival in the Congo. That's after this.
New York City public housing, children still live with the danger of lead poisoning.
They can always say, well, the kid got it at the daycare center, or he went to his grandma's house. They were very comfortable lying.
Did the nation's biggest public housing system endanger the health of its residents? I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
President Trump's former campaign chairman Paul Manafort is going to trial in the first test of special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation.
If he can gather this sort of documentation on Manafort, just imagine the sort of data and documentation and evidence he's going to be able to gather on President Trump.
What Manafort's trial means for the president, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, what you don't know about whales. Like the fact that they're descended from four-legged creatures the size of dogs who walked on land. Marine mammal paleontologist Nick Pyenson says there's more.
We hardly know all that there is to know about these enormous animals, the size of dinosaurs that live in today's oceans.
Pyenson's new book is Spying on Whales. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
President Trump now says the Koch brothers are a total joke. Over the years, their money and libertarian agenda have changed our politics and our laws, but they disagree with the president on immigration and trade. What might that mean for the midterms and the GOP's other mega donors? The Koch brothers up close, next time on 1A. Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, it's a Pulitzer Prize winning play that tells the story of war, love, and survival in the Congo. It's an unusual place to be the setting for a play, but author Lynn Nottage also uses the medium of theater to bring a global political message about rape used as a political weapon. Ruined won the 2009 Pulitzer for Drama. And Phase 8 Theater Company is bringing the production to town here at the WJCT studios. We've got a preview with Phase 8 founder Jamario Stills and WJCT's own Carlos Semide. He's making his acting debut. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Oh, you're even going to talk in character.
Perhaps, if you allow me.
You're even dressed in costume.
It looks great.
I wish everyone could see you. You've got like a... like an African safari jacket on, and you look really cool.
Thank you.
We'll hear about Carlos's character in a minute. First, though, Jamario, this play is set in a war zone, and most Americans really haven't closely followed what's going on in the Congo. But if they come to this show, they'll learn. What's it about?
Essentially, what happened, Lisa, was the writer and the director went to the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and they went to interview women there. But they weren't quite sure what they were going to be met with. And they were met with women fleeing from the armed wars there. And they quickly discovered that there was a war being waged on them. And it was a enlightening moment for the playwright Lynn Nottage. And she thought, okay, well, this is a deeper conversation that has to be shared with the world. And given who we are as a theater company, we thought it was important to bring that kind of relevance to the stage locally.
Carlos, who do you play in this show?
I play Mr. Harari. He's a diamond merchant that comes through and forms a bond with Mama Nadi, the main character. And he helps with her troubles and what she thinks she could do. She's a very strong woman in the middle of all this. The war stops at her front door. She will not allow it to come in.
Okay, and let's explain what the war is and how people might have heard the phrase blood diamond or conflict diamond.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really know what it means.
They don't really know
what
it means.
Can you explain what that's all about?
I can do my best. I mean, it's very complex. I mean, we're talking about not only a political system that's corrupt, but we're also talking about the mining community. And a lot of this place centers around miners who are on the verge of or are seeking this rock called coltan. And this coltan rock is actually something that's used in all of our electronic devices. So if you can imagine, the more we make these devices, the more there's a demand for it. Thus, the deeper the war goes. And so...
And that's what's so maddening. Right. We are inadvertently funding and extending this misery.
We all are contributing to the massacre.
Which is horrible. And so I think it's hard for most of Americans to understand this, but one way they can really get even a beginning of a window into it is to come to this production, because... it won the Pulitzer, and it explains these issues in a way through the medium of live theater, so people can kind of feel the emotions behind it.
It makes the information readily accessible, And so I think the audience is going to love it. There's a romance element to it. But yes, I think they're going to have a great time.
Yes.
Now, Carlos, this is your acting debut. Now, you are well known here inside the halls of WJCT for your charming personality. What enticed you to get into a play like this?
Well, in my own voice, I read the book cover to cover when I got it. I read it like I was double parked, you know, and I was really drawn to the strong character of Mama Nadi, who has to manage the rebels and the government soldiers and the girls that are in her brothel and everyone that comes through. And I thought of the strong women in my own life. Growing up in New York City, my grandmother, my abuela, took care of us two boys through the 60s and 70s, which was not easy. My dad was a single dad because my mother passed, and she took care of us, you know, still strong traditional values. So if you have a strong woman in your life, you know, this is a play to come see. And once I got done with it, too, also, as Jamario mentioned, the war on the women really impressed me as well. I went straight to my daughter and gave her the biggest hug ever. And I hope the gentlemen in the audience feel the same way, that they squeezed them like they never want to let them go because they appreciate them so much.
But, that's nice.
That's what drew me to the show, the strength of the women. They're not just in boardrooms or, you know, in restaurants. Regardless of the geography, strong women are everywhere. And if there's one in your life, you know, go hug her right now.
And go see Ruined here at WJCT. This kicked off August 3rd, but performances running this weekend and next, correct?
That's right. 3rd, 4th, 10th, and 11th.
Go to phase8.org to get tickets to the Pulitzer Prize winning Ruined. Jamario Stills, you're doing such great work. Thank you so much for being here. And Carlos, break a leg, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Again, that's phase8.org. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme by the symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Up next, when you think of the Koch brothers, what comes to mind? A closer look at their influence next. I'm Melissa Ross. This is 89.9. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And don't miss our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.